Big refund, big project, big savings at Menards. Turn your tax refund into your next big project. That patio you've been dreaming of is more affordable than you think when you do it yourself. Get free estimates fast using our landscaping design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big on the largest selection of concrete landscaping blocks at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online, After Midnight.
For the first few weeks, the house felt like exactly what they had hoped it would be. It was not especially large, and it was older than the places they had rented before, but it had enough space for the family to spread out a little, and that alone made it feel like progress. There was a small yard, a decent kitchen, and a living room that opened into a second sitting area the previous owners had used Ijoud as a den. Nothing about it was remarkable, which at the time was part of the appeal. After years of apartments and temporary fixes, they wanted something ordinary, something stable, something that would finally feel like their own. In the beginning, it did. The first month was full of the usual distractions that came with moving into a house for the first time. Boxes stayed stacked longer than they meant them to. Furniture got shifted from one room to another and then back again. They discovered which door stuck when it rained, which floorboards gave a little underfoot, and which windows needed an extra push before they caught. It was the kind of settling-in process every house seemed to require, and because there was always something else to do, small irregularities barely registered. That changed once the house stopped feeling new. When the boxes were gone and the furniture finally stayed where they put it, routines began to take over. The evening settled into a pattern of dinner, baths, cleanup, bedtime. The older kids started moving through the rooms with the ease children develop quickly, learning which corners could be cut and which stairs creaked loud enough to give them away if they were supposed to be asleep. The adults fell into their own rhythm too, trading off bedtime duties, picking up toys, loading the dishwasher, finishing the last few things that never seemed to get done before 10 o'clock. It was only after all of that became normal that the house started to feel less straightforward. At first, the signs were so small they were easy to dismiss. A cabinet in the kitchen would be open when no one remembered opening it. Something left on the counter would turn up on the table instead, close enough to where it had been that nobody felt certain enough to argue over it. One of the kids would insist that a toy had been in the den when it was found upstairs, and the obvious explanation was that a child had moved it and forgotten. In a house with young children, there was almost always a reasonable answer waiting to be chosen. That was what they chose, over and over. Even when the older child began resisting bedtime in a way he never had before, it did not immediately feel connected. He had always been the easiest of the kids to settle at night, the kind who might ask for another glass of water or one more story, but who rarely made a real issue out of being alone in his room. Then, not long after they had fully settled into the house, that changed. He started asking whether his door could stay open a little wider, then whether the hall light could stay on, then whether someone could come back and check on him again after a few minutes. None of that was alarming on its own. Kids went through phases, new house, new room, new noises. It made sense. What made less sense was that he never described it in a way that sounded like an ordinary fear. When they asked what was wrong, he struggled to answer. He never said he had a nightmare or thought there was a monster in the closet. It was always something more vague and harder to dismiss. He would say he woke up because someone had been in his room, then seemed frustrated when asked who. Another time, he said he thought somebody had been standing near his bed but could not explain why he thought that. His answers never became clearer with repetition. They only developed a certain consistency in how unsettled they left him. Even then, that was still not enough to make either parent feel truly alarmed. It was unsettling in the abstract, but not beyond what could be explained by a child adjusting to a new place. The younger children did not make it easier to ignore, though. It was not that they described the same thing. In fact, if anything, what made the whole situation harder to pin down was how differently it surfaced. One child grew clingier in certain parts of the house, especially after dark, though there had never been much separation anxiety before. Another, still young enough that speech came out in pieces, developed the habit of glancing toward the den during quiet moments, as if tracking movement no one else could see. More than once during family gatherings or errands, there would be some unexpected insistence about going home, not with the usual childish impatience, but with the certainty of someone who believed there was something waiting there. None of it lined up neatly enough to make a story out of. That was part of the problem. Each thing by itself was small, explainable, the kinds of details parents often forgot because there were too many other things competing for attention. But over time, those moments began to collect in the back of the mother's mind, not as proof of anything, but as a loose and unpleasant pattern that she found herself thinking about more often than she wanted to admit. The babysitter noticed it too, though not in a way that felt dramatic at first. On evenings when family helped with the children, there would occasionally be some odd comment at pickup, always delivered half as a joke and half with real uncertainty beneath it. The baby had stopped feeding and stared at the same empty corner for several minutes. One of the children had been laughing in the den and then suddenly started crying hard enough to be carried out. Another had refused to go back upstairs alone after coming down for a drink of water. None of those things were impossible to explain, and no one treated them like evidence of anything. Still, it was unsettling to hear similar observations coming from people who had not been there for the earlier ones. Even then, the mother kept choosing the practical explanation. Old houses made sounds. Children picked up on moods. One anxious bedtime could turn into a pattern if adults reacted too strongly. She believed all of that, and she wanted to keep believing it, because the alternative was too absurd to entertain in the middle of ordinary life. She had babies to feed, laundry to finish, work to get through. There was no room in that schedule for the idea that something might be wrong with the house in any deeper sense. The moment that finally broke that denial did not happen during one of the bigger incidents people usually remember first. There were no voices, no doors slamming, no shape at the end of a hallway. What happened was quieter than that, which was why it worked so thoroughly on her. It was late, well past the point when the house should have been settled. One of the younger children had woken crying, and she had carried the baby downstairs rather than risk waking everyone else. The kitchen light was on, and enough light from that room spilled into the living room and den that the first floor felt open rather than dark. She sat with the baby for a while, trying to calm her, and when the crying eased, she set her down on the rug with a few toys to buy herself a minute. At first, everything seemed fine. The child reached for one of the toys, touched it, then stopped. When the mother turned back, the baby was staring straight across the room toward the den. It was not the distracted way babies often look past people, or the kind of random fixating that means nothing. This was steady, focused, so intent that it changed the whole feel of the room in an instant. The mother followed her line of sight automatically and saw nothing at all, only the darkened den, the edge of the sofa, the familiar outlines of things exactly where they should have been. Then the baby began to cry again, not fussy crying, not tired crying. She cried with the full, immediate panic of a child reacting to something directly in front of her. The mother picked her up at once and tried to calm her, but the child kept looking back over her shoulder toward that same room, each glance making her cry harder. Wanting to prove to herself that there was nothing there, the mother stepped toward the den. The baby clutched at her shirt with surprising force and began screaming. That was the first time she truly felt it. Not saw it. Not understood it. Just felt, with a clarity that bypassed reason, that they were not alone on the first floor. She backed away instead of going forward, carried the baby upstairs, and sat in one of the children's rooms until everyone finally slept again. By morning, she had already started doing what she always did with the house, flattening the moment, trying to reduce it to nerves, to exhaustion, to a baby reacting to shadows and a mother reacting to the baby. She might have kept doing that if the next night had passed normally. It did not. The house had been loud all evening in the ordinary way family houses are loud, and by the time she got everyone into bed, she was exhausted enough to be irritated by everything. She was halfway up the stairs after telling the kids, for what felt like the 10th time, that it was time to be quiet and go to sleep, when a hard crack split through the first floor. It was loud enough to stop her where she stood. She turned and went back down fast, her first thought not paranormal at all, but immediate and practical. Someone had gotten in. The sound had come from the kitchen. As she rounded the doorway, she saw water spreading across the floor and glass, or what she first thought was glass, scattered near the island. For a moment, it took her a second to understand what she was looking at. The heavy water pitcher that always sat well back from the edge, precisely because there were little hands in the house, was lying broken on the floor. No one else was downstairs. No child could have reached it without dragging a chair, and there had been no dragging, no footsteps, no warning. It had not slipped from the edge. It had not been left carelessly where someone might have brushed it. She knew exactly where she had put it. And standing there in the spilled water, listening to the house go still around her, she stopped thinking first about the pitcher. She started listening for someone else in the dark. She didn't clean it up right away. That was what stayed with her later, more than the sound itself. Normally, something like that would have triggered an automatic response. Grab a towel, keep the water from spreading, make sure no one stepped in the glass. Instead, she stood there for a few seconds longer than she should have, listening. The house had gone completely still. There was no follow-up sound, no movement in the next room, no shifting upstairs, nothing that would suggest someone had just been in the kitchen. If anyone had caused it, they would have had to be close enough to hear her coming down the stairs, close enough that she should have seen or heard them leaving. She checked anyway. She moved through the first floor quickly, looking in the den, then back through the living room, then toward the hallway that led to the side door. Everything was closed. Everything looked the way it should have. The quiet had already settled back into place, the same way it always did. After something ended, that made it worse. By the time she returned to the kitchen, the practical explanation had already started to fall apart. The pitcher had been heavy, thick glass, the kind that didn't tip easily and didn't crack without force. She had set it well back from the edge for a reason. Even if it had somehow shifted, there was nothing in the room that could have nudged it far enough to fall. She cleaned it up after that, slower than usual, checking over her shoulder more than once without fully realizing she was doing it. When she went back upstairs, she didn't go to her own room. She went to the children. They were all asleep, undisturbed, exactly as they had been when she left them. She stayed there longer than she needed to, sitting in the dim light and listening to the quiet of the house from a different distance. It felt different up there. Not better exactly, but removed. The next day it was easier to dismiss. That was the pattern she had fallen into without noticing. Night created the problem, and daylight took it apart piece by piece until it no longer seemed as solid as it had felt in the moment. A pitcher could have been placed closer to the edge than she remembered. It could have shifted. Something could have been unbalanced. None of those explanations were satisfying, but they were possible. She held on to that. For a while, things settled again, not completely, but enough that it became easier to believe that the worst of it had passed. The children still had their moments, restless nights, odd reactions to parts of the house, but nothing as direct as what she had experienced. Even the small things, the ones that had been happening before, seemed to space themselves out long enough that she stopped expecting them, and that was when it happened again. It wasn't late that time, not in the middle of the night, not during that quiet stretch when everything felt more exposed. It was early evening, with the house still carrying the leftover noise of the day. Dinner had just been finished, the kitchen still cluttered, voices moving from one room to another. She was in the living room when she heard it, a short, solid sound from the kitchen. Not loud enough to alarm her immediately, but distinct enough that she turned toward it without thinking. At first, she assumed something had been knocked over, one of the kids bumping into something, a utensil falling, something small and ordinary. But no one had gone into the kitchen. She crossed the room and stepped into the doorway. Nothing had fallen. Nothing was out of place. For a moment, she stood there trying to match the sound she had heard to something she could see. The counters were clear. The sink was empty. The cabinets were closed. Then she noticed the chair. It wasn't one of the kitchen chairs. It had come from the other room. It sat just inside the doorway, angled slightly into the kitchen, as if it had been pulled there and left mid-motion. She hadn't moved it. No one had. And standing there with the house still active behind her, voices in the next room, children moving through the hallway, she felt something shift in a way that daylight couldn't flatten anymore. This wasn't tied to time. It wasn't tied to quiet. It happened when the house was full. After that, she stopped trying to explain it. Not out loud, not fully, but internally the way people do when something stops fitting into the explanations they've been using. She still moved through the house the same way. She still followed the routines, handled the kids, kept everything running the way it needed to. But something had changed in how she paid attention. It was no longer about isolated moments. It was about how those moments fit together. The children didn't describe anything new, but they didn't need to. The same behaviors continued, waking up unsettled, reacting to spaces in the house in ways that didn't match anything visible. But now she saw those things differently. They weren't separate incidents anymore. They were part of something that had been there the entire time, just outside of what she had been willing to acknowledge. The house didn't feel wrong all the time. That might have been the most unsettling part. There were still long stretches where everything felt completely normal, where the routines held and nothing shifted out of place. Those were the moments that made it possible to stay, to keep living there, to convince herself that leaving over something she couldn't fully explain would be an overreaction. But the other moments didn't stop. They changed. They came at different times in different ways, but they carried the same feeling each time. Something present. Something aware of where they were in the house. So the final shift wasn't loud, and it didn't come with a crash or a clear, undeniable event that forced a decision in a single moment. It came quietly, in a way that made it impossible to ignore afterward. It was late again. The house finally settled, the children asleep. She was in the living room when she noticed the silence. Not the normal quiet, but the absence of even the small sounds she had grown used to. It felt like the house was holding itself still, waiting. Then from the den across the room, something moved. Not fast, not enough to make a sound, just enough that she saw it. For the first time, she understood something she hadn't allowed herself to before. It wasn't attached to a single room. It wasn't tied to one part of the house. It moved, and it had been moving the entire time, and they left not long after that. Not in a panic, not in the middle of the night, but in the practical, deliberate way people leave something they no longer trust. When they explained it to others, they kept it simple. The house wasn't right for them. It had issues. It wasn't working out. That was easier than explaining the truth. Because the truth wasn't just that something had happened in that house, it was that something had been there the entire time. And they had only started noticing it once everything else in their lives had finally settled down enough to see it.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Don't you wish everything was more rewarding? With Rakuten, almost everything is. You can earn cash back on those new shoes you've been wanting. You can save on the next trip you book. You can cash in on groceries. Just join, shop your favorite brands, and save. Target, Instacart, Expedia, Macy's, Sephora, CVS, the list is long. Save online, in-store, and at over 22,000 restaurants. And when it's time to redeem those rewards, get your money exactly how you want it. Choose PayPal, check, Bilt points, or cash out with gift cards. Eligible American Express card members can choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cash back. Terms and conditions apply. So go ahead, take a trip, fill a cart, order dessert. Rakuten is a world of rewards. Join today for free. Go to Rakuten.com or get the Rakuten app. That's Rakuten.